Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
I am.
Hey guys.
I was.
We're back. Oh, remember me. We are back in the tested office again.
We are back in the tested office. Are we running a camera? Are we seeing?
There's that one right there.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hi, guys. So we are, we just finished recording our first totally unauthorized commentary.
Which is, I love. I want to do lots of these.
It was really fun.
I think that's great.
I mean, it's, just to be clear, we, most of this, you have some inside information.
Yeah.
But most of it, most of what we talked about was just as an appreciation of the film and the work that went into making the film and kind of reflecting on what that, what's changed over the 10, 13 years since that film,
yep.
since that movie came out.
And I worked on it for more than a year, and I had a, you know, a, it was a really wonderful project to work on, so it was great to see it again. I have a higher opinion of the movie now than I did when it first came out.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me to hear you say, oh, I worked on that movie for a year, and then we saw maybe, what, a couple of dozen shots all told?
Oh, yeah.
Would that work? It's amazing how many people work on a film that's that scale.
Even see. Yeah. In fact, actually, the credits list is probably about half of the actual number of people that worked on the film, too.
Because there are people that are just...
They actually have a limited amount of time to run the credits. At ILM, when they were finishing up Star Wars, I know the model shop was about 200 people strong.
Wow.
And you couldn't get a credit on it unless you'd worked on it for a certain number of weeks. And they kept on increasing the number of weeks you had to have worked on it to get a credit because there was just too many people for the length of the crawl.
So, and
I actually made the first six cuts, but they finally made it like a 16 week credit minimum, and I had worked 15 weeks on episode one.
Joseph Heller-esque. Mm-hmm. Is John Williams getting paid by the minute for that closing song?
I don't know why there's a limitation. I have no understanding of why there's an actual limitation.
The prints cost the extra.
I'm not a film producer, so I, you know,
that's,
I can't.
Funny.
Know.
Didn't Kevin Smith do a thing with Clerks 2? Like you can get your name in it, and then he listed just like 1,000.
Really?
Well, it was Red State, I think, wasn't it?
Red State, right. One, if you invested more than 100 bucks or something.
That seems right.
Yeah.
So today, hey, guys, we have something special to announce. This is a spoiler cast.
Ah, spoiler cast.
People love the spoiler cast.
Do they?
They seem to.
Okay.
I hope so.
They reacted positively to the Pacific Rim one.
Spoiler cast, except that this time, the film we're talking about.
Gravity.
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 Good thing
we all saw it.
Yeah, finally. I snuck out of work early one day to go see an IMAX before it went away.
And I saw your text to me. He just wrote, that is one hell of a movie. It's exhausting.
So, okay. It is a hard science fiction movie on a scale you don't normally see hard science fiction movies made at.
Yep.
You know, the last thing that I saw that was of a similar kind of tone was probably Moon.
Right.
Or maybe, I mean, you could argue that like the first half of Sunshine or something like that kind of sets the same kind of hits. But it is an absolute ride. It starts with this incredibly long, super tense, like the shot was so long that I knew it was coming. So I'd read the Entertainment Weekly preview or whatever, but you're not used to a shot that long. It's like the scene at the end of, what was the movie about? With Nicole Kidman, where she plays the homicidal weather girl.
Oh,
it's the weather girl.
To Die For.
To Die For. The end.
Gus Van Sant.
The end credits of that. There's this shot of somebody skating on a pond.
Oh, right.
And it just goes on and on and on. Yes. They run the credits over. It's like 7 minutes long.
Is it Ileana Douglas?
I think so, maybe. Yeah.
So Alfonso Cuarón, who directed Gravity in his first movie after Children of Men, he is known for long shots,
elaborate long,
but previously.
What's
practical,
that? Yes. Entire. Well, he has no fear of the technology. So in Children of Men, there's a couple of protracted sequences. The most famous one is when Clive Owen and Julianne Moore are trying to escape, and this band of, you know, tree dwellers,
marauders,
trying to stop them, marauders, put out a flaming car. So there's this long shot in the car where the camera's panning 360 repeatedly in the car.
It goes in the car.
In the car, out of the car. And this is an assemblage of, I think, three or four different shots with an incredibly specific camera car vehicle with a driver both front and back so that the car could reverse and there was somebody steering the car.
So it's like a fire truck.
Yeah,
but you
even
can
while
go either way.
Chiwetel Ejiofor was actually doing the driving. There were parts of the car that were removable. In fact, as that camera's moving 360 in Children of Men, the actors sometimes are moving out of the way of the cameras. And some takes they did, some of the actors aren't even in the shot and they're compositing.
Wow.
I mean, just a tremendous amount of work into that thing. And the only way you get the full picture of how they did it is it's a combination of looking at the extra materials on the DVD, which don't give you the total full picture because they make it seem like it's all practical. And then you read the full Cinefex article about it, which tells you about how much compositing and CG there actually was
That's
to make it work together.
Reading the full Cinefex article is always the secret, right?
And then at the end of that movie, there's another protracted long
there's
shot.
The one where they're, leaving the building. Scene where blood ends up on the camera lens. Yep. And that was a mistake. That was actually a happenstance that Cuaron really loved and utilized to a great effect in Gravity. And this is all of a long way of saying that Cuaron feels he's not doing long shots just for a long shot's sake. It's not just, I'm going to do my touch of evil or the beginning of the player type of shot. He was very specific about Gravity being worth watching in 3D and using 3D in a way that other people haven't. And one of the things that he feels is that rapid cutting in 3D pulls you out of the 3D experience because we don't see the world in edited cuts. So he wants those protracted takes because it makes it more of an immersive experience for us, the viewer.
And the movie is from a plot perspective, it's near real time. Some segments are condensed, but the idea is that
it is effectively real time and the shots are long.
Right.
There's almost no quick cuts back and
forth. Which is wonderful.
Yeah. No, and it is the I don't remember the 3D. That's the thing about it. I don't remember going, oh, that's really cool 3D. I just remember being completely exhausted by how incredibly tense the film was.
It's a pretty subtle 3D. Mm-hmm. There's not – I think there were a couple of times where something kind of flew out at you a little bit. Maybe an elbow came out of the screen a little bit.
I'm having trouble just revealing what goes on because I don't want to spoil it. But, of course, it's a spoiler cast. Tear.
Yeah.
Her tear moving from focus to blurry.
So focus tricks with 3D really irk me.
Really?
Because I'm looking at the world right now. I don't want to alarm you. I don't have depth of field because my eyeball is pretty awesome.
Right. But he's directing your attention with the focus.
I understand
that. I guess you have to make that choice.
But I mean, it's the thing that annoyed me about Avatar as well.
I could only conclude.
Well, one of the things.
I could only conclude, perhaps, that the director might have looked at it both ways, thinking the same thing, and tried it, and realized that one worked better than the other.
Well, and ultimately, you know, that movie is going to see airplay on small screens, and the vast majority of people who are going to see it are going to see it in 2D, and depth of field works in 2D extraordinarily well.
But, I mean, so let's talk about that opening shot. It's 18 minutes long. It starts out looking at the Earth.
Yes.
And then from a great distance, what feels like about a half a kilometer, you're looking at the international – you're looking at a space shuttle.
You're seeing the space shuttle in the Hubble.
You see something move very slowly across the screen on the right, and you wonder what that is. And if you're – first of all, you're just basking in Earth.
Right. This is a gorgeous shot.
It, like the poster behind me, it says overview.
Yes.
That is the name – the effect that astronauts have given when they look at Earth. From space, you get this awareness of it's very difficult to describe unless you've been in space. The awareness of how small the planet really is and how all encompassing and exactly.
Do you know? Speaking of this, there's a wonderful, wonderful Buckminster Fuller when he would give talks. I might have said this before, but okay, I'll say it again.
It's fine.
He would hold up a 2.5 foot diameter aluminum sphere, and he'd say the Earth looks like it's got a lot of water. I mean, 70% of its surface is water. And the oceans are pretty deep, right? I mean, 2, 3, 7 miles deep at the deepest part. There's a lot of water. He says, what if the Earth was the size of this sphere, 2.5 feet? How deep is the deepest ocean on Earth? He says, the condensation of my breath on the surface of the sphere is as deep as the Marianas Trench. It makes it seem a lot more delicate when you think of it.
A little
that
bit
way.
Of a different perspective.
Yes. So it starts out, and you're watching, you're hearing the chatter between NASA and the astronauts, George Clooney, Sandra Bullock, and an Indian astronaut whose name I can't remember.
You
never actually see him until he's dead.
Well, you see through him. That's a strong reveal.
It is a hell of a reveal.
You see a photo of him with his family.
That's right. And you sort of zoom in on, and you get the character layouts, which is that George Clooney is the old man. He knows his deal out here. Sandra Bullock is the new buck who's just getting used to holding down her lunch in zero G on a spacewalk. Yep. She's trying to fix some computer panel on the Hubble that she's designed, which is presumably the reason she's up there.
The exposition is very efficient.
It is very efficient.
Their roles and their how much experience they have.
So this is where it's important to note, because for something that is so meticulously rendered as real, there was a fair amount of criticism from storied people about the science of the movie.
Okay. Well,
I don't.
We'll go into.
Yeah, we should go into that a little bit, because later. There are places in which, to me, it is picking nits off of the most lovely framework. I grant that there are some problems with the film. I think the script is at times gets a little obvious, but I absolutely will give it up for it. But yeah, well, we should talk.
So
about
the jetpack was the first. Is the first thing because Clooney was flying around like he was the Rocketeer.
Right.
You know, in a way that doesn't work in microgravity.
Oh, it really?
He was doing like radial motions. It would be pretty difficult.
So what they did was they interviewed several, including Phil Plait was interviewed and other astronauts who've used the jetpack, as NASA really does have a jetpack.
Yeah, yeah, their MMUs absolutely do have.
But the amount of time you could use it and the maneuverability for that. It was exaggerated.
They did go on to say that he was operating a new prototype.
Exactly.
Right. They also, if you follow the film's logic, because the Chinese space station was completed, that we're probably around 2020.
Yeah.
With a resuscitated space shuttle program or a never
and
put out
it was a shuttle that did
program.
Not exist.
I mean,
we're
looking at an alternate reality.
All I was going to say is that if you're going to pick nits at that level, you just should turn off now because you're not going to have fun with the movie.
Yeah,
it's
totally true.
It's
that's the kind of thing that ruins
movie.
Your enjoyment, because I think that even that Phil and Neil deGrasse Tyson, who also had some specific problems, they both gave it up for like, no, don't get us wrong. This is a terrific movie, and I'm so glad that somebody made it.
I don't think anyone's nitpicking ruined their enjoyment of the movie.
No.
I don't think anyone watched that movie and said the movie was ruined, because I think what the nitpicking does was bring more awareness of real science.
Yeah.
And what this movie does is get people interested in space.
But I mean, I'm a little bothered by the fact that Tyson was so quick to tweet that there were problems with things like her hair not being weightless and stuff like that. Literally, he is such a god of academe when it comes to that sort of the popular culture science collision, that I really feel like there are people who might go, oh, well, I saw a tweet that Neil deGrasse Tyson said the science isn't very good, so I'm not going to watch that movie. That is like, everyone's missing the point.
Yeah.
He had to go on the radio and back up.
And mea culpa and say, okay, you know. It's a tempest in a teapot here.
It's not like we were watching The Core. And, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So,
but it, like things like even the tier that we mentioned earlier,
the core.
There's a lot of talk, and
like the core.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's great! it is the best B movie, highest production value. It is intentionally
bad.
I've
seen the last 20 minutes of it.
Oh,
Hilary
so
Swank,
good.
Right?
Hilary Swank. Yeah, right off of Million Dollar Baby, I think, or no, Boys Don't Cry.
Sorry, what were you saying?
The tier.
Norm is.
And one of the nitpicks was, astronauts can't cry in space. And it to me, that is a nitpick. It's more letting people know, hey, there was actually a study that astronauts did trying to cry in space.
And Hadfield actually did a lovely video about it with his tears splashing like waves on his cheeks.
Right, because the surface tension holds it there.
But from a storytelling standpoint, this is the thing is, I will give it up for that. And so will anybody else.
Yeah.
I'll go toe-to-toe against that Amsterdam shit any day of the week. That needs to, you know... Let's all put it in perspective.
So the movie starts.
To go back, this opening shot starts out at this great distance, really giving you, the audience, this kind of astronaut's eye view of how intensely beautiful the planet is from there. Because the lingering shots of Earth throughout this movie are astonishing.
I could watch just the background.
Totally.
I mean, it's IMAX. I remember going to see IMAX movies of the Earth and, I can't remember what it was called, but it was at the National Air and Space Museum. It was amazing.
Totally incredible. You still haven't reset your clocks here.
It's Monday morning, man.
That's a whole 24 hours.
Those shots of Earth, beautiful, still pale to photos, even like Hasselblad photos of Earth, like and footage the astronauts have shot, because the reality is that much.
Oh yeah, but the other thing they did throughout Gravity was they took you through a whole bunch of day and night cycles, which I guess are about 90 minutes each.
Thereabouts, yeah.
Just something like that. So they took you through several day and night cycles where you get to see the shadow of night falling. You get to see the cities lighting up. And this shot, which starts out with that, ends up over 18 minutes taking you all the way through repairs that Sandra Bullock and George Clooney are doing, the disaster that starts the action narrative of the film going, and ending up with Sandra Bullock, what feels like miles from safety, breathing her last oxygen, and you're looking at her heads-up display from the inside of her visor.
Yeah.
I was watching it. I knew that that shot existed. I knew that you ended up inside her visor, and I was watching it, and I was still like, how did they do that?
You didn't notice the transition. All you know is all of a sudden you can see the stuff on her visor. And because that shot is so long, but it helped the 3D a lot. It helped ease you into the 3D.
Really?
But B, the tension of having a shot that goes on that long in the viewer's head, you don't even notice it. But you're just like, it's got something. I want this to change.
Yeah.
This is a movie. It should change by now. I should see something. We watched MTV for 30 years, and the quick cuts, we're just used to them. It's the way things go.
What a cut can do is, instead of change perspective, jump forward in time.
Right.
And what this does, being near real time, having protracted shots, is give you the gravity of their peril.
And it also makes it the degree to which the film is in real time aids the action so much, because you know you're going to suffer through the whole trip. You know, it almost increases the claustrophobia while you're looking at her O2.
You're holding your breath every time she calls out from 8% to 5%. You're like, oh, maybe I should be conserving my breath.
You're just thinking,
watching this.
Stop breathing so hard. Stop breathing so hard.
Oh,
stop breathing so hard.
Tense.
Stop breathing
and
so hard.
And that's the soundtrack of that 18 minutes is her.
Oh, yeah.
And you're hearing, it's just like, this whole extra level of tension.
It's super intense. And then the close-ups of her face as she's sitting there, you watch the panic come on her face. She spins out of the you actually get a pretty good sense of how terrifying it would be to not have any control at all over your momentum and your motion.
Yeah.
And you're with her as she brings it back under control, as Clooney talks her down.
Yes. And now the other thing about it that's totally amazing is that pretty much that entire sequence, that whole 18-minute opening sequence, totally CG.
Except
for the faces of George Clooney and Sandra Bullock
and
in their helmets. What's that?
And the Earth, right?
No, Earth CG.
Earth CG too?
90% of that movie, CG.
Wow. Yeah. All constructed.
I assume that was file footage that they got lifted from NASA or something. That's bananas.
Isn't that astonishing?
Wow.
It is. It sort of beggars belief what he was able to do with CG. It's something other than we've seen before.
And the type of motion control rigs they need to build to shoot the actors' faces.
Yeah, well, so that is actually, to me, one of the most interesting technical things that they did. They knew given the subject matter of the film, it was very hard to get it made. It took a long time. A lot of studios turned it down. I believe that the casting of Clooney and Bullock really helped. But still, they had $80 million to make a movie with, you know, easily over $150 million worth of production value that they had to get out of it. So Cuarón and his team, they actually pre-visualized the entire movie from start to finish.
Well, I mean, they'd have to.
Yeah, but every single shot, every single beat, every single line, they pre-visualized to a degree that they effectively shot and edited the movie before they even started principal photography.
So the amazing thing to me about that movie, though, it's an effects movie. But I think you could probably make a two-person play, you know, do it on stage with two people and lighting and projectors and some, you know.
Wow, that would be amazing.
Like, there's no the
effects aren't front and center. The drama
no.
is.
Yeah. You by the end of that first shot, you kind of like, okay, effects, whatever. This is an incredibly tense story
it's
about
a character
woman.
Piece. And so that was the thing that – so when I say it was almost all CG, Sandra Bullock's face and George Clooney's face were composited into CG astronaut suits. I don't know if they did motion capture for the suits or not.
So my understanding is that what they had was them in a suspension rig and they moved cameras and lights around.
Yeah, I know they did that, but I don't know if the astronauts' movements were actually motion captured. But the rig that they put the actors in – to shoot their faces was totally amazing, because everything about the film is where they are in space. And I don't mean just space. I mean what is the visual logic of the film and where are people in relation to each other and their levels of safety and danger. And that's something that good directors are really excellent at, like Spielberg. And there are directors like Michael Bay who really don't give a shit about where you are in space. It's just cut, 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 cut. And your mind kind of assembles its own space. So because that was so important in this, and because Cuarón likes the extended shots, he knew that if they filmed the actors' faces to put them in the spacesuits, the light on them had to be very specific. You know, Earth is over here and the sun's over here and reflection and bounce. So they built this film, this light box, inspired by a Peter Gabriel show that they went to, where they saw these two-foot LED panels that were addressable, so you could put video on them or any color temperature of light you wanted out of them. And they built a 9 by 9 by 12 foot box lined with these panels. So one, they could put any color temperature they wanted on the actor's face. Two, they could actually put bands of the color so you could light half their face, or you could actually move the band so it looked like the actor's spinning when they're not. And then inside that box, a robotic camera, which does the camera moves around these actors' faces, match moved to the already rendered CG astronauts in the shots. It gets better. Because the panels were fully addressable, if Sandra Bullock is looking at Earth over here, the space station here, and Clooney's here, in addition to the lights, they can actually put those in the box so she has eye lines to look at.
Wow.
They can give her Clooney's face over here and Earth over here.
So is it one actor at a time in the box?
One actor at a time in the box. Very hard to get into the rig to be motionless.
Super uncomfortable is my understanding, right?
Yeah, super uncomfortable. And because the thing had already been pre-visualized massively, the actors didn't have a lot of freedom in terms of extending their lines or ad-libbing or adding any text whatsoever. Cuarón was very specific. Okay, here you get to do this. You can improvise here in the middle a little bit, but you've got to hit the whole thing in 18 seconds. I mean, it's really, really tight.
This is amazing because sometimes you see, you learn about new technology that's invented to shoot a film, whether it's the armature dinosaur puppets for Jurassic Park or the motion control camera in Star Wars, and you see, okay, this is going to be everywhere in 2 years. This is something we're not going to see again. Because there's not, like, this is a, it's custom built for this.
It is custom built for this.
And see it for a mech movie.
What's that?
Giant dude in a robot suit movie.
Right, right. But I also think that, I mean, given how little ability to stretch out the actors had, it is a testament to the fact that both Clooney and Bullock are the highest caliber actors that it doesn't feel like they're pushed into.
I never would have known that they weren't making eye contact when they were making eye contact.
Absolutely.
In that movie.
And I do think that for some of those shots, they were actually, I feel like some, in some they were put together. I don't know. I don't know how that exactly worked. But, I mean, how do you pronounce the DP's name? Lubisky?
You're asking the wrong person.
All right,
about
let's look it up. Cuarón and that DP, who also did Children of Men, they are braving absolutely brand new territory with the bridge between the
Emmanuel Lubezki.
Cuarón and Lubezki are absolutely, I mean, they're like doing Harryhausen level groundbreaking. You know, what Harryhausen was doing with Sinbad and Jason and the Argonauts, these guys are doing, and just as he was using the latest technology and really cool ways to solve problems, like how to make an actor fight a skeleton, these guys are using relatively available technology and repurposing it and doing radical, radical stuff.
Taking the pieces apart, putting them back together in a different way.
I cannot wait to get the Cinefix about this movie. I'm going to read it twice. I just want to say one other thing is that apparently Sandra Bullock, who, if you know her, apparently says, "Call me Sandy," and is every bit as nice and sweet as you could imagine. I know a couple people who know her, was a machine and would sit in that chair in the box for 9 hours at a stretch to get her stuff in. I mean, you only ever see two people in this movie. It is her and Clooney, and Clooney's gone halfway through the movie. This whole movie is her in every single shot, and she just kills it.
It's cheaper, I mean, for $80 million movie to get her as a great actress to do that than to do effect shots over and over again.
Yeah. It's totally astonishing. I also say something else I really liked about her casting was, you know, there are some other nitpicks that some people had. Like,
she wasn't wearing a diaper, man.
She wasn't wearing a diaper. Hadfield said, you know, I don't look nearly that good when I get out of a spacesuit. And I totally get that. He didn't say that it bothered him very much. But, you know, even though she gets out and she's in shorts and a tank top, I won't say that she's not a beautiful woman, because she totally is. But they didn't make it a TNA shot.
Oh, it was a TNA. It was an 80-foot tall Sandra Bullock.
I appreciate that, but I really, look, she's an older woman. She's in her late 40s, and it wasn't like she's got an inflatable, crazy, impossible body, the type you normally see in movies.
Sure.
It felt like a much more regular, worked out sort of athletic body.
Right. What they were showing off was her having worked out for a long time leading up to the shooting.
Because so often in movies, I even appreciated that, like, the wet t-shirt wasn't titillating at the end, that it was, I mean, granted, it's a wet t-shirt, but I really think they on purpose chose her costuming to make it more about the character rather than you just like, oh,
and
wow.
And they chose her because the alternate actresses were younger, all younger actresses, mm-hmm. not as believable as astronauts.
I feel like that too.
Yeah, the average age of the astronaut corps is like 48.
Right. She's like the appropriate age. Right. And the
so
appropriate...
after you're done being a football player, you could go and...
Yeah,
that's right.
Well, so... Go ahead.
Oh no! I was just gonna say. I thought, I felt like at some point when she took off the spacesuit in the space station in ISS,
yeah.
and you're like, oh, Jesus, really? I just felt like at some point somebody had to have a conversation. And yeah, we'll do the Sigourney Weaver taking her out of the spacesuit scene. Right. It'll be good. It'll be real sexy. And the Hollywood producer guy was like, oh, okay. Well, in that case, here's another $20 million.
Right. And I will actually. That's a great example of the difference. Yeah. I mean, the whole thing of Sigourney Weaver in her underpants at the end of Alien that's absolutely titillating and terrifying and exemplifies her vulnerability.
You're right. It's not necessary because it's a vulnerability.
Right. There's vulnerability, right. But it's also, I mean, she's a gorgeous woman and she's in her tidy whiteies. And the contrast between that and Sandra Bullock in her athletic gear, it's a real contrast. It was much less of that kind of.
But it was also it functioned as showing her vulnerability in a breathable oxygen-rich atmosphere.
I also loved that first shot of her in the ISS when she goes into the fetal position and rolls there.
And you have the strategic placement of the tubes for the umbilical cord.
Yep.
And
well, it's the Star Child, right?
Right. Yeah. I saw a totally 2001 kind of reference. They did. So if you watch that scene, you can see that her thighs are tensed.
Yes.
And there's a good reason for this is because when she was weightless, they investigated wire work and all sorts of other ways. And they used, I'm not sure if this is brand new, but it seems pretty, I haven't heard of it being done before. They actually repurposed a factory robot, a five-axis factory robot arm with a fiberglass shell cast to her body and spun her. So she's actually holding her orientation tightly, perfectly during all those interior ISS shots.
It's the kind of thing
when
she gets
on the radio, trying to reach back to Clooney, and he doesn't respond because he doesn't want her to look for him.
Yes,
you can tell she's very perfectly still, and like her legs are like shaking just a little bit, but it's because she's being held up by 12 wires.
She's did a very, very incredible job at holding steady in that stuff, and they did a lot of from what I understand from the articles that I've read, and I've gone and read a whole crap ton of them, did a ton of removal of that robot arm, but it allowed them a freedom and repeatability of movement through the sets that you wouldn't have otherwise got. They also did a ton of building out the interiors of those sets in CG, from what I understand.
Oh, really? So those weren't practical sets?
I think that there was lots of parts of them that were practical, but I don't think that they were totally practical.
I assume that anytime she was interacting with the walls was probably practical.
I've also seen some behind-the-scenes shots that made me think otherwise. Like, I've seen behind-the-scenes shots of her and Clooney when they're together in the Soyuz, mm-hmm. where he appears.
One front panel.
And also his suit has no details on the chest plate, but they're there in the film. And I don't know if that was a practice run or if they then added in all that detail later, because it was cheaper to do it in CG than to have a model maker spend $10,000 building a suit perfectly.
Wow.
I don't know. I mean, it's open to I'm waiting to read more about it to find out those specific details.
Well, we'll get to Clooney in the Soyuz in a little bit. my favorite part about the ISS sequence was as she's floating down looking for the radio. I guess she's looking for the radio. It's when she's doing the traversal of the whole module. She's getting ready to go to the Soyuz. you see Chekhov's fire. So there's a little ball of fire. It's poofing off. It's the tiniest little thing. And that, you know that's going to come
it's
back and bite her.
Beautifully done too, because it terrifies you. She doesn't see it.
You say out loud when you first you said, "Oh shit!"
Yeah, I totally did. Yeah, because I'm fire on the space station.
That's real bad.
I'm no expert, but that equals bad.
Yeah, that's not a good thing. And I had the same the same clench. You know.
Yeah.
So you, but I didn't expect it to turn so quickly,
so badly. Yeah. But you know they're feeding oxygen in there.
But it's low pressure, and there's all sorts of it was totally intense,
and the fire was beautiful. And I think that was all CG.
It had to be
zero G fire. It makes zero G fire. Not really a place you could. You can't really set fire to the vomit comet.
I don't think you can set up. Hey, here's the shot list for the ISS. We've done that before. I don't think they'd let us set anything on fire.
I don't think so. But her movement through it, we have some experience of Hadfield giving us those beautiful shots of him moving through the space station.
Oh, it's amazing.
And it felt exactly like that.
The only difference is when you get it from them, it's a static camera because they can't give you an extra astronaut to aim and float with them.
Right. The ultimate steady cam.
Oh, my God.
Zero gravity.
Okay, so she's on the space station. I felt like they did a really wonderful job replicating. I mean, Norm and I have walked around the mock-up in Houston.
Yeah.
It felt as small as I would have to imagine the real deal.
But you can still, with so many parts and pieces that you can actually get lost.
Oh yeah,
like there's it's longer than you think.
Every module has arrows that point you toward the give you orientation, because also your orientation is constantly out of whack because who knows
there's no up and down.
Yeah,
yeah. I really liked the how they never. In the abyss, as they're moving from outside to inside, there's lots of just like, here I am at the door, and now I'm inside taking off my suit. They never did that in Gravity. It was always, I am going to unwind the thing that opens the hatch, and I might burst out on me, and now I climb into safety. I mean, all of that stuff was done. It made it so excruciating.
The wait for the pressurization in the air. Yeah.
The bursting out they did, I think, one too many times. The flap on the hatch.
I loved the last one, although the motion, the kinematics on that motion felt just a little ragdolly to me.
A little bouncy.
On that last one.
Yeah, on the Chinese station, right?
On the Chinese station. Although, and I'm jumping around, I know, I loved the fire extinguisher.
The Wally?
The using of that to...
Right out of Wally.
It's so great.
You should bust that one because I think I don't think you could do that.
No, you can't. There's not enough in there. But it was great that she would, as she was doing it, she'd see the station and she was spinning.
Right.
And then she was.
She'd
count.
Go 180. Right?
Yeah. And she'd count. 45, 90, 180, and then launch. Yeah.
So that stuff also falls in the if you think about it too much, you're not going to have fun.
And you don't need to think about it too much. The physics of using a jet to control yourself, if you had something that had that much power, you would have the same problems that they showed her having.
If you're going to question something in that movie, the thing to question is how much grip can you get in those crazy tight, incredibly uncomfortable gloves after you've already been working for 5 or 6 hours.
That's true. Yeah, it's very exhausting to move those gloves
just
around
to close your hand and the grips that you know the flying by at massive speeds and all that.
I'll never let go, George Clooney.
Yes,
never let go.
his knowledge that it's time to let go and his delivery of that really, you know, there's a thing that about movie stars at that caliber, and I guess he is, you know, the top one. They just know when to not do, you know, just to, it's too much, and not to overact, not to oversell, but just to let the moment.
The difference between that and cliffhanger.
No!
That buckle took 12 minutes to break.
I also really loved the animation of the Soyuz parachute and all the cords.
I thought that was really well done.
I thought that was incredibly well done, and it just felt so, again, claustrophobic, even though you're in the least claustrophobic place possible.
I can't imagine a Soyuz capsule has to be claustrophobic. They're tiny inside.
They're tiny, but and then you're outside, and there's just this parachute floating everywhere, and she's trying to get away, and she can't.
And it's pushing back.
All of that stuff is super intense with the clock ticking.
Yes. So the clock ticking, the suit sounds when she was running low on oxygen, all that stuff was done really well. I still feel like they undersold the danger of space. And I know that sounds weird, but you think about the aborted spacewalk with Luca Parment. Luca Parmitano. He had a water leak. The water was crawling up the back of his bald head.
Yes.
He was going to drown inside his spacesuit because he couldn't shake the water off.
Yes, yes.
Because surface tension is stronger than the other forces working on the water.
Hadfield had something else, the same thing happened, and it turned out to be, it turned out to be a droplet of the antifog he had used in his suit. And he had vigorously put antifog on the inside of – this is in his book.
Yeah.
He had vigorously put antifog – by the way, as an aside, there's a trailer out for Hadfield's book that is really, really
funny.
Is that
the one in the bookstore?
Sweet. What?
The bookstore one?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
it's wonderful. At any rate, he had vigorously antifogged the inside of his visor, and he had left a droplet of the antifog that he never didn't see.
Yeah.
And it had come around and practically blinded him during the spacewalk.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they spent weeks troubleshooting what had happened on this.
And it's that it's a thing you don't ever consider. And I mean, I don't know how you would sell it in the movie. So I'm not – it's not a criticism, but it is – I feel like space was much safer feeling – I felt like safe was much safer feeling after watching Gravity than I did after talking to the spacesuit people.
Space exploration.
I guess the thing that sold the danger of space to me was we talked about the Indian astronaut who you only hear his voice. You never actually see him alive on screen. When you do see him, he has been killed. And it's a Jaws reveal. It's just the reveal of what's his name from the movie Jaws when Dreyfus is down in the boat and the head appears. In this case, the astronaut, a piece of space debris flying at 20,000 miles an hour, has gone right through his face, and you can see the Earth through the hole in his head.
See the shape of the thing that went through his face.
It is the exact shape, like a Bugs Bunny right through the fence outline. And it is – that shot is – it's – terrifying when you think about how scary that stuff can be.
And it sets the it's danger at beyond a human scale.
Beyond any scale. Right. Yeah. So these objects are flying 10 times faster bullet.
There's some hinky science there too. We're not going to get into that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. About the cascade effect and how fast they would travel if they're already orbiting in the same direction, et cetera, et cetera.
So it's design of ISS and spacecraft tries to take into account for that in the real world,
right?
And the NASA has shown like what happens when something traveling that speed hits the side of the ISS. It's just a big dent. It doesn't go through, but you do see lots of dents.
Right,
you see lots of dents. There's a reason for that cloth covering helps to actually slow down the objects.
Just enough.
It is a terrifying bit, that reveal of his damaged face.
Well, and also the other astronauts inside the space shuttle.
That was also
when they tried to go back to explore.
And
you have like a little horror moment.
Another Jaws. I'll tell you the one bit of science that bugged the crap out of me.
Okay.
She lands on Earth. I guess she's somewhere in China.
The last 3 minutes of the movie, I did not like.
I actually loved it. I loved her climbing out of the water. I loved the idea of birth. I loved the idea of her being on a
new planet. That's all hallucination. She totally died in the Soyuz.
No.
Absolutely
no,
died in the Soyuz.
No.
Clooney
no.
was an oxygen deprivation hallucination.
No.
She came back to Earth, is reborn. Everything else.
No, I don't accept that. Well, so here's the problem I had. She's in the capsule. It lands in the water. It fills up with water. She can't get out.
You know.
That's all. I know exactly what that's like, and she can't get out. So she holds her breath. She gets out. She's in the suit. The suit is making her sink. Mm-hmm. She gets out of the suit underwater and then swims to the surface without releasing her breath.
No bubbles.
If she did that, for real, her lungs would have burst and she would have died of internal hemorrhaging before she ever reached the surface, because there are a whole bunch of rules to scuba diving.
Adam Savage says the science of gravity is crap, so the movie must be
but
terrible.
But the only rule is do not swim up while holding your breath ever.
Right, never. It is literally the first thing they tell you every time you get in the water when you're taking your lessons.
Yep, yeah. But
her picking herself up, I understand that she's strong and that she, but like we've seen astronauts getting rescued and like they can't, they have no way.
That is not a hard and fast rule. That is not a hard and fast rule. There have been astronauts who, and I can't remember, I think Ed Liu, who spent 6 months on the ISS, I had dinner with him and Phil Plait a few years ago. And if I remember correctly, Ed was telling me, trying to see if I remember the story correctly, that on his mission, it was really important that he walk out of the shuttle. And he said it took everything he had, but he was able to. Your muscles are not used to gravity. It is a really, really debilitating experience to come back to Earth's
gravity. But it's also a function of the time you spent up there. And if they were on a shuttle mission, they would have been up for 2 or 3 weeks.
At the most.
Presumably.
Yeah. I didn't have a problem with that. I know that some astronauts have been able to walk their way out of a shuttle.
Maybe it was more heavy-handed, like she is doing the literal climbing out of the water.
Yes.
And then becoming a man.
That is a place where, look, I will agree that the script felt obvious, but I also love that they didn't give you her seeing people, that they kept it personal about her and she's alone. And in a way, they let you understand spatially how close she was to Earth.
It was good that she had one last good vision before passing off into the unknown.
No, she didn't die.
She turns off the gas. The gauges go into the red. She hallucinates Clooney. Fire, then water. No. Common, pre-death images.
I also like Ed Harris was the...
Ed Harris, who I recognized. Yeah, I totally recognize that. And there's just nobody who I would ever want to be my shuttle commander from the ground besides him.
I want to imagine that he was wearing the vest.
Yes, exactly. I hear Tom Hanks going... Most of them are gone, but some are still there.
You guys really didn't think that she died? No. I mean, I immediately...
I totally realize that that is a very reasonable assumption to make, but I reject it because I'm happy with thinking that she survived.
I just landing the capsules are hard.
Yeah.
A lot of stuff was broken. She didn't follow the normal procedure.
She's guessing, et cetera, et cetera.
Right. You're writing at the edge of a paper on the outside of a beach ball.
I think if that's the thing that the director was going for, it would be a disservice to her character.
I don't think that's the case.
Well, look, I mean, it's clearly, if he hasn't said...
Well, he's not going to say.
Yeah, yeah, he's not going to say. So it's whatever you want it to be. I personally want her to survive, so that's the way I accept it. No,
you reject my reality make your own? Okay,
yeah.
I see how it
is. Don't use my own catchphrases against me. I actually had to say that to my mom. Mom, don't use my catchphrases. Mom, don't use my own catchphrases against me.
Everybody,
and I know it's not my
movie
catchphrase. I know it comes from the Dungeon Master.
If you haven't seen this movie... You should go see it.
You shouldn't have been listening to everything.
Yeah, you made a horrible mistake already.
It's a stunning achievement. That Cuarón is a groundbreaking filmmaker, both from a story standpoint and a technological standpoint, all in the service of making going to the movies more immersive in what feels like a new way.
The amazing thing to me about the movie was that I stopped noticing effects. I mean, I was noticing effects because I knew we were going to talk about it and I was paying attention.
Yeah.
But had I gone in to enjoy a movie, it would have been the story of Sandra Bullock, the astronaut, after about the first 4 minutes.
Yeah.
You were fooled by the Clooney comeback.
Yeah. I was watching it going, this can't be real. This can't be real.
They give
this
you enough clues.
This is either this is the beginning of her death throes. Or
as it was.
There's no way, in your opinion.
I'm going to ride this all the way down.
Okay, cool. I knew that this was like, I was like, if they get to the end of the movie and they haven't addressed this, I'll be pissed.
Right. The giveaway, and there are lots of little clues, like when he pulls out the vodka, it's like, yes, conveniently right there in the sippy cup, like
hold on,
the sippy bottle.
Clooney would know where the vodka's stashed on the ISS. We all know that.
Yes, but that wasn't on ISS. It was on Soyuz.
No, it was on ISS.
The coolest guy on Earth.
But it's attached to the ISS.
When you're the coolest guy on Earth or off Earth, you know where the vodka is.
Well, he mentioned it earlier, and that's what it seeps. It was a callback.
Yeah, of course. Right.
Do you think this movie is successful? Because the movie has been very successful now.
Absolutely. Number one for 3 weeks running. 3 weeks. Has it finally left IMAX here?
It left IMAX for Ender's Game this weekend.
And it was
which
number two.
Is not bad.
For Bad Grandpa, made number one. It was the first movie to topple it. Do you think the success of this movie we'll see a rise of space movies in the next coming year?
Well, I know for one thing that Alfonso Cuarón will get to do whatever he wants on the next movie.
That's great.
And I think that's fantastic. Well, I mean, look, that may not be. You know, the studios, this film was a hard sell, and you can see why it was a hard sell.
Yeah.
And the fact that he succeeded in making a hit movie out of it, You know, it might not engineer a sea change about how the studios look at his next project, because, you know, Hollywood is littered with directors who had a monster billion-dollar franchise and couldn't get their next passion project made. But he has such an incredible track record now that I'm really looking forward to seeing what he's interested in doing next.
And I can really see in movie in studio pitch rooms using Gravity as an anchor point to pitch a movie. It's like Gravity, but with squirrels.
It's Apollo 19. Right. They're going to fix Apollo 18.
Like Gravity meets some Jaws.
But underwater.
Speaking of space sequels, I found out what the sequels to Spaceballs was going to be called.
Oh, God.
Which never got made.
Yeah.
But it's the tentative title was Spaceballs 3, The Search for Spaceballs 2.
That's perfect. That's exactly right.
Isn't that? Yeah. It's just like
just go to the video store run. And there it is.
Yep.
Yeah. It's a really good movie, guys.
I think that about wraps it up. It is a stunning movie. It is really, really wonderful. If you really, if you get a chance, and I'll bet it'll come back to IMAX, it really needs to be seen in IMAX in 3D. That is the proper way to see this film. The Blu-ray, I'm sure, will be incredible. But if you have a 3D television, please watch it in that. But the immersive, it is intended to be immersive. And like Pacific Rim, which I saw both in normal 70 millimeter or whatever, and IMAX 3D, it suffers mightily from watching it on a smaller screen.
Pacific Rim especially, was the robots look like cartoons on my 58 inch TV at home.
Right.
The scale of this movie is astounding on IMAX. And I also have to say, props to IMAX people, at least in our local theater. They have switched from those crappy tan glasses that were the big ridiculous ones that came out with Superman Returns.
Mm-hmm.
And the new ones are infinitely better for people who wear glasses.
Infinitely better for people who wear glasses. Nice wide field of view, super light. You don't spend your whole time kind of doing this shit.
They still do the radial polarization. So if you tend to tilt your head while you watch the movie, then don't do that.
It's going
to
make texting really difficult while the film is happening, because you only see your phone with one eye. But if you're texting during a film, screw you.
Yeah. Also, the pro tip is always, if you're going to watch a 3D movie, bring lens wipes.
Ooh.
Oh,
and
nice.
Norm, well done. You taught me the secret of IMAX 3D movies.
Sitting in the back,
in the middle.
You know, so here's the thing. I'm normally a control freak. And Norm said, I'll get the tickets. And I was like, I am not going to ask where we're sitting. I know that Norm has this shit wired. Yeah. And we got there and you were like, we're second from the back. And I thought, wow, I'm going to trust Norm entirely. He knows what's what. And he's looked it up and it was great. It was really great. I have found some IMAX movies like overwhelming looking like this. And from the back, you're getting the whole
and
screen in your
vision. If you're too far to either side, then the polarization gets hinky.
Yeah. No, back center.
Well, there we go. That'll do it for Still Untitled this week.
That was a good one.
I think we went crazy long on this. I think it was warranted. If you have other movies you'd like to see us spoiler cast, let us know. Comments on iTunes, feedback, all that stuff. We appreciate all that.
I think maybe we should next time maybe go to the movies together. Go see a new movie together.
I think that's
and
come a good
back
idea.
And spoiler cast it right away.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
11 o'clock at night. fresh first impressions.
I
with
was
absolutely
thinking of the
no...
Sunday morning 10:30 show.
Okay, that works too.
Okay.
Whatever. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye, guys.
Bye.